Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan McPherson, and as always, I'm joined at the board and the controls here by Alex Gossett-Shiflett. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing just great. How about yourself?
Fantastic. It's another Wednesday edition of Atlanta Business Radio, and we've got a full lineup of guests in studio today. But before we get started, let's remind our listeners to connect with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X. That is the network, and you can follow the show at Atlanta BIZ Radio, Atlanta Biz Radio. And don't forget about little old Facebook. Check us out there. Leave your thoughts and comments, and you'll be able to see photos of our in-studio guests. So let's say hello to our in-studio guests. First, let's say hello to a returning guest, Mr. Bob Littell. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm great.
Good. And you are with Chief Net Weaver. Is that right?
That's correct.
And net weaving is something you're helping implement here, but it's also coming up on Pay It Forward Week. Is that right?
Well, Net Weaving Pay It Forward Week. We're now in our fifth year and excited to let everybody know about it and see if we can fill up restaurants, hotels, and business clubs.
Outstanding.
This year.
Yes, I'm sure you can, and we'll help you with that. So please stay with us, listeners, and Bob, as we also introduce Suprit Patel. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And you're with Prestige Group. Is that right?
I am.
Tell us about that, please.
You know, we're operating in the very exciting and changing industry of healthcare, which I know a lot of your listeners probably have a ton of experience in. And it's a rapidly evolving industry, and we're helping providers kind of change the way they approach the industry these days.
Good. And we'll look forward to talking to you more about Prestige Group and why it's important that Atlanta is the home of the Prestige Group and yourself. But let's also introduce to the program here today, Dasharn Kendrick. She is with Kendrick Law Practice in a Georgia House of Representative. How is that?
That's fun.
That is fun. I saw, you know, law, we've had some people in here, lawyers and attorneys, but I think you may be our first state representative.
Well,
so welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be the first lawyer and legislator. You got double trouble here, but thank you.
That's right. So very good. So thank you so much for taking time out of, I know, your busy schedule to join us. But let's start at the beginning. Kendrick Law Practice, when did you begin your own law practice?
In 2010, which, interesting enough, was the same year that I ran for my first term in the Georgia House, and I started an MBA program at Kennesaw State. So, I guess you can blame it on being young and foolish, but I have been practicing law for a total of 8 years and had my firm for six.
As for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And what's that like, running your own successful law practice? So you got wear a lot of different hats in that role, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do. Of course, you're the janitor all the way up to the CEO. So those of people that are starting their business can relate to that feeling. Mm-hmm. But it's rewarding. I get to do a lot of exciting, great things and meet a lot of great people who have interesting stories. I was born and raised in Georgia.
Okay.
So just to see the evolution of it for the last 33 years has been amazing.
Certainly.
At the business environment.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about Atlanta a little bit more later on in the program, mm-hmm. about how it's a great place for you and your mm-hmm. business, a great place to grow a family. I'm from Atlanta area too, so it's a great honor to host Atlanta Business Radio, but your particular law practice is with private securities.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that to our listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. So everybody knows basically what a securities is when you talk about stocks and mutual funds and things like that. I deal with private companies that want to raise private funds. So I don't work with clients who want to go through an initial public offering, an IPO, or companies that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. I only deal with companies that want to remain private, mm-hmm. that don't want to have the ongoing reporting requirements of the SEC, but they do want to raise private capital.
So they have different needs and different means of raising that capital as someone who was wanting to take their organization public.
Right. I mean, it's staying private means that your costs are going to be less because you're not going to have to report to the SEC and do mm-hmm. all these reports and things like that. But there's a particular way that you have to do it. And so many people don't understand that even though you're not a big company that's listed on the stock exchange as a private company raising capital, there's still a regulatory scheme, both on the federal level through the SEC and then through the state government that you have to comply with.
So there's always advantages and disadvantages of going in either direction. Can you talk about some of those?
Yeah, sure. So, a positive of doing maybe a company going public obviously is if you have gotten to that point where you you are going to become public, then you obviously have done something very, very successful and right to get to that level.
Yes.
One of the advantages of staying private, as I stated before, is you don't have to do the same reporting requirements.
Okay.
So investors particularly like private companies, because with a private company, the founders and the management tend to take risks that are sort of better for the company, because they don't have to wait. They don't have to report to the SEC that next quarter or the next year. And so there's less pressure to sort of make money and make sort of those riskier decisions. So it just depends on what you want as a founder and what the goals, the overall goals of the company are.
Now, when you were a young student in law school, did you dream of being a private securities lawyer, or did you just find yourself in this niche later on?
Well, I knew I wanted to do transactional law. I knew I didn't want to go into the courtroom, although I was a litigator for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I did get that side of litigation. But I knew I wanted to do securities work. I've always had an interest in business and sort of capital formation and things like that. But I really got into the private security space when I took securities classes and realized that there was this whole other realm of raising capital that didn't involve the SEC periodic reporting requirements. And I said, I need to focus on private capital because my parents are entrepreneurs and they would be more in the private capital space as opposed to growing a company to do a merger or to be bought out or an IPO. And so this is something that I sort of gradually went into. But I knew I wanted to do securities, just not private securities at the
time. You knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur. As you mentioned, your parents were entrepreneurs, so it's kind of in your history there to want to, you know, do your own thing. But being a lawyer, it's got to be challenging as well.
It is. Not only is the market oversaturated with attorneys, I'm sure everybody knows at least five or six attorneys, but it's a very competitive market, especially when you're talking about business law with things like LegalZoom and the different forms that people can download or pick up at their local Home Depot. This area of law is something even lawyers don't do their sales, because it is a very niche, particular, highly regulated area of law. And so you can't sort of just Google how do you raise private capital and get all the different things that you need to do.
So that's a good question. How does business find you? Who are these partners in industry that recommend you, or how does a client even come to know that they need your service?
One half of it is sort of the serial entrepreneur, somebody who's raised capital before, and so they know that they need a securities attorney, not just a regular attorney. Mm-hmm. The other half are people that have read somewhere and sort of after the fact find out, oh, I was supposed to do X, Y, and Z. Let me get a lawyer.
Yeah.
And so we have a mixture of people who do that. But, of course, we work with investment firms and venture capital firms and angel investors. And we work with broker-dealers. So, you know, there's a whole industry out there full of professionals that say, hey, you not only need an attorney, you need a securities attorney, specifically a private securities attorney, because it's a different regulatory scheme than if you're working with a public company. So that's who we work with.
Yeah, and there's lots of those groups here in Atlanta, for sure. And you can continue to network and find your way getting involved with so many different groups. But let's also mention that you have a nonprofit group called Minority Access to Capital, Inc. What was the kind of story behind that and what got it started?
Well, this came out of sort of my frustration. I'm involved with a lot of investment groups, and obviously I network with a lot of entrepreneurs and investment firms and things like that. And every time I was at a meeting, I would turn around and either I would be the only woman or the only racial minority. And I said, there's something wrong with that, particularly in Atlanta, where we have Metro Atlanta. It has the highest number of Black-owned businesses, and it's number one in women growth of businesses. I said, there's something wrong, it's particularly in the region that we're in. And so I rant and rave on Facebook, as many people who follow me know. And so I put up a post and say, who's willing to start this nonprofit with me and really come together as finance professionals, either women or racial minorities, and really teach people about what capital markets means. It's a sort of esoteric area of law, and not many people know how to navigate its waters, particularly women and minorities. And I said, I'm going to do something that's going to use my talents and the talents of those that I know in order to make sure that those particular groups get access to the over almost $2 trillion over the last 10 years that's been invested in private capital.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of small businesses needing help and needing guidance or needing some sort of support along the way. And if you can provide that niche help like you do in your law services, you're doing that for the community as well. You know, there's an old saying here in the studio, niches bring you riches.
Yeah.
So keep continuing to serve
those.
That's all right. We can thank Lee Cantor for that one. So, Alex, you got a question?
Yeah, I did. Mine's a little more personal, though. When I was reading your bio, you have two bachelor's degrees, right?
Yes.
You have a law degree.
Yes.
And you have a master's degree.
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to run for president of the United States?
No, I'm not. I'm here to announce I'm not running for president of the United States. But I'm happy to be going into my fourth term in the Georgia House of Representatives. I get to do so many wonderful things there, particularly as it relates to private capital. Just last week, we had a meeting, an ad hoc committee that I was able to chair, made up of members of the Georgia House that I felt like really concentrate on this area of law. And we were able to take testimony from people about how to make legislation and regulation better for the upcoming legislative session. And I was able to put that committee together and have a series of hearings, and I'm going to be leading that effort. So I get to do amazing things with my particular area of expertise in the House. So I'm happy about that.
Okay. And one more question. Where does that drive come from? I mean,
depending on how you look at it.
Or craziness, but it's something you definitely have a drive. I mean, to accomplish everything that you've accomplished at such a young age. Where does that come from?
I really do think it comes from my parents. Like I said, I grew up, I was born at Grady and grew up in Decatur. And, I had one of those families. They started young. They had kids when they had us starting at age 21. They tried to give us the best life that they could as entrepreneurs, but they couldn't give us everything. And I made a commitment early on just to make my parents proud because they sacrificed so much for me. And why I'm so happy to represent the area, where I grew up. So I have to attribute it to my parents because they, I saw the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur, and I said, what can I do in order to make that better? And I decided law school and politics might be the closest thing I come to making them whole. So I got to give my parents credit for that.
Well, my hat's off to you.
Well, thank you.
And I'm sure they're very proud of you, and Atlanta's proud to call you one of their own for sure. And for those listeners who don't know, she now represents over 54,000 Georgians from DeKalb and Gwinnett counties. And you serve a lot of different chairs, as you mentioned, a small business development chair, job creation, a lot of different things. So why is Atlanta important to you and to continue to help and do social good for the city as a whole?
Like I said, Atlanta is in my background, so I'm glad to serve as the ranking Democrat on the Small Business and Job Creation Committee for the last 4 years. And Atlanta is just very, very special. When you look at the trends of where people want to invest their private capital and the types of initiatives that the state of Georgia is setting up, I think Atlanta is very, very poised to take some of the Silicon Valley money. They've already started to do that. We also have some initiatives related to the film and entertainment business, some initiatives with that. So I'm looking forward to over the next few months while we're out of session is really coming up with a plan, working with the Secretary of State's office and with some policymakers to really tap into what else can we do more to attract all that capital.
Yeah, to attract all that. And so we know the presidency is not next for you, but what is next for you in 2016 and beyond?
Well, at the end of July, I fulfilled my mother's dream of finally getting married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So she's happy. She's happy about that. But we will see. Since I don't have any competition this year, we have a 2-year term. So I'll be in the House at least until 2018. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to doing the exact the same thing that I said of helping drive more capital to Georgia. And hopefully I will be able to collaborate and build Minority Access to Capital, my nonprofit, with my fiance who deals on the debt side of things.
Okay.
It's like a match made in heaven.
Right.
I do equity. He does private debt. And so we'll be able to build that and really be a force in Atlanta. But I really do want to thank you for this opportunity to come on and speak. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the great things that are going to come out of what we're trying to do in the state of Georgia.
Yes, and her accomplished bio, all of it in full, will be posted on our website later today, atlantabusinessradio.com. But before we turn to our next guest, please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, website or social media links, any of that.
Yeah, sure. So my website is www.kendricklaw.net. That's www.kendricklaw.net, or you can give me a call, 678-739-8109. And for those of you that know, I get to take advantage of being a millennial, so I'm on every social media outlet that you can think of. I've reached my friend limit on Facebook, which is 5,000, but yeah, you can also follow my page, Kendrick Law Practice, and I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and Periscope, and everything except Snapchat, because I'm scared of that. But okay, everything else,
okay,
everything else.
You can find her out there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Darshan, for joining us in studio. We look forward to more great things, and come back and be a guest when you have some exciting news to share, like maybe after your honeymoon or something.
Oh, that sounds good.
Okay, good deal. All right, listeners, thank you for staying with us as we now turn our attention to Supert Patel. He is with the Prestige Group, managing partner and founder, which is based here in Atlanta. So when did you found the company?
Well, you know, before we get into that, I'm also here to announce I'm not running for president.
Okay,
so I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Two for two so far.
You're doing good.
I want to set that stage. You know, the Prestige Group is something that I founded in the last couple of years, and it really came out of a need that I saw in my management consulting career. I've been a management consultant for the last 12 years, helping hospitals, health systems across the U.S. as well as in Europe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the changing landscape in healthcare and all the regulatory changes with the Affordable Care Act and just the way business needs to be done, I saw a need for providers to kind of change their focus.
Okay.
You know, I think mainly it was that this kind of trend and this topic of healthcare consumerism kept coming up. And I'm sure the listeners have heard that term. And, you know, it's been in the news a lot. And really what it represents, at least to us, because there are probably 100 different definitions for that, you know, depending on who you ask. But really what it means to us is that, unlike before, providers, and by providers, I mean healthcare, you know, physicians, physician practices, hospitals, mm-hmm, those kind of folks, you know, they have to view patients as consumers. They're not just patients that they treat clinically anymore. They're consumers that they have to attract, and they have to compete with other providers for their services. So you have to, you know, it's really changing the whole mindset of how providers went out to get patients. And so this change, along with this concept that of outsourced analytics, this is a kind of a term that kept bouncing around in our heads. You know, we saw in healthcare, you know, no shortage of tools or applications or innovation being done by companies. You know, mm-hmm, there's new business intelligence tools every day that are out there, and they're extremely powerful. But the problem that I kept seeing was, you know, smaller physician practices, smaller hospitals, they don't have the time, they don't have the resources, and they don't have, you know, the ability to really take advantage of those. So that's where outsourced analytics really came in, was, you know, leaning on somebody else who has the experience and expertise to actually derive value from those tools. Let us do that work for, mm-hmm, you, so you can get back to, you know, focusing on delivering care. Right. You know, it's really about, we saw providers' attention was being shifted away from delivering care and more into the avenue of running a small business, and that hurts them clinically. And I think there was a market there that needed to be met, needed to be fed. So that's where we decided to found the company on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be the best doctor in the world, and you can do it for the most, you know, heartfelt reasons, but that doesn't make you successful.
That's,
you know,
right.
Running a good business or working for a large practice doesn't make you successful either. So understanding the patients and how you treat them and what are some of these rhythms they come back in and see you begins
right.
to help you manage that and plan ahead for what all the things you may need to grow your practice.
Exactly. And, you know, it goes back to there being a shift. You know, it's physicians are, I mean, obviously highly intelligent, highly capable individuals, but when it comes to running a business, they don't necessarily have the time to be able to do that. And mm-hmm. and we're operating in a much more competitive environment right now than we ever have before. You know, with the changes in healthcare, people like you and me have to burden more of the financial risk of going out to get healthcare. You know, we have to pay. So what that means is we're going to go shop for services.
Yes.
We're not just going to go to the doctor we've always gone to. We're going to go online. We're going to compare services. And it's not just based on cost. You know, it can be based on
location.
Location.
I think that's a huge consideration.
You know, we look at reviews.
Yes.
We look at what else can we get done there? Do they, I mean, in Atlanta, I think all the listeners in Atlanta would know, do you have parking?
Yes. Do right? I have to pay for it? Is
exactly.
It free?
Right? I mean, that's a consideration that previously you didn't have to really to think about. So as consumers or as people start taking on more of the financial burden of their own healthcare, they also, you know, have to go make decisions on where to go find that healthcare. And providers have to be ready to react to that and, you know, attract people in new ways.
Right. And so how does a provider know that they need your services? What are some of the writing on the wall that they may see or not know that it's time to call the Prestige Group?
Yeah, there's a few ways. You know, first of all, we deal primarily right now. Our target audience is more in the specialty provider market. And when I say specialty providers, I mean folks like dermatologists, right. dentists, especially surgery centers, mm-hmm. orthopedic surgeons. These are folks that are, you know, in our mind, operating in a highly competitive environment. So you'll see, you know, if you drove down Peachtree up by Piedmont, you'll see a number of orthopedic surgeon, you know, offices.
All right like within that. The same, you know, square mile.
That's right. So, you know, anytime you see increased encroachment in terms of competition, you know that you need to understand your population a little bit better. You need to go find how to compete against that environment. Mm-hmm. The other way is, you know, we see a lot of providers that are trying to expand into new areas that they don't have experience in. You know, we work with a provider out of state that wants to get in state because he sees Atlanta as a potential, you know, growth market. So, mm-hmm. you know, folks looking to expand operations and get into a market that they're not familiar with, you know, they can use our services because we're able to tell them about the population that's there. We're able to tell them about their ideal patient population, who they should be attracting. And really help them get into that new market. And again, it goes back to them not necessarily having the time to do this, but also, you know, and we've seen this in large hospital systems too. Mm-hmm. I mean, just this is not just a small market thing, but people tend to react or rely too heavily on their gut, you know. Mm-hmm. And there is no shortage of data in healthcare right now. It's really a matter of how do you use it most effectively.
Right.
And so that's one of the keys.
Yeah. And there's so much data being collected now from the patient side of things. And then how does that play into your practice and having some, you know, probable outcomes? What are some of these outcomes that doctors are often overlooking when, you know, planning their practice?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the key service offerings we offer, and we have three offerings, but one of the cornerstones is what we call patient segmentation. And segmentation is really using statistical or mathematical mm-hmm. models to group your patients into different categories. So, you know, the benefit and the beauty of this is that you can find correlations between patients that aren't there to the naked eye or aren't there through traditional means. And and this is something that providers can learn from other industries. You know, retailers have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, they break you down into like 10 different categories and how you predict to buy
exactly.
and everything. So applying that same methodology to the doctor and,
yep.
and their care practice and making sure the patient gets the best care along the way.
That's right. You know, it helps them with that. It also helps them find the characteristics of each of those groups. You know, are you serving an older population? Mm-hmm. Are you serving a heavily uninsured or insured population? Is it age? Is it gender? I mean, as everybody knows, people of different ages, people from different geographical areas, you know, they consume information in different ways. So you can't just do a one-size-fits-all mm-hmm. approach to going to find your target audience.
Right.
And you asked about the probability. I think that's really powerful because, you know, statistics and using these statistical modeling techniques, which is what our company is founded on. You know, we've developed our own algorithm that does this. It allows for probability reporting, and that's powerful for a provider because imagine you were a dentist and you could tell that you know, Supreme made an appointment and there's a 95% chance that he's going to no show. If you knew that, which is what we can do for you, you can alter how you schedule patients. You can avoid having empty slots on your scheduling. So I mean, this is really powerful information that, and I kind of go back to this every once in a while, and I probably bore people with it, but you know, in my management consultancy days, I got frustrated because I felt like we were pricing out smaller providers, and you know, they couldn't really afford these services. But this is not earth shattering or new. It's new that we're offering it to a market that has been priced out of it previously.
I see.
And that's what we're really trying to be price disruptive. We're trying to get in there. So,
Yeah, I have a question. And this is just for my curiosity. Have you heard of boutique physicians?
I have.
What is your take on that? And is it growing?
It is growing. You know, it's funny. I think boutique physicians are growing. You also see a growth in things like urgent care clinics. You see a growth in concierge medicine. These are all kind of terms that we're seeing exploding all over the marketplace. Telehealth is something that you probably see a lot of. And actually, Atlanta is an interesting place because we have large corporations here in Atlanta that are getting very aggressive into telehealth and telemedicine because of their, you know, their presence in things like the internet and broadband services and things like that. I think folks probably know who I'm talking about. I don't want to mention them by name, but you know, there's all these kind of different models of care that that the new regulations and the new laws have allowed to expand. So one that your audience may be aware of is you know, the accountable care organization structure. And really, these are about, you know, changes in how you reimburse providers for their care, how you shift the risk and things like that. To us, it all goes back, though. I mean, these you can have whatever model you have, whether it's, you know, boutique medicine or an urgent care clinic or, you know, telemedicine clinic, you know, things like that. It doesn't really matter. That's the beauty of what we're trying to do is at the very core of somebody's operations. They need to understand who their patients are, mm-hmm. number one, and they need to understand how to get in touch with those people. And that's really the key of what we're doing and why we think that, you know, we don't have a shortcoming when it comes to typical, you know, who's your market. Our market's wide open.
Right. So it could be anywhere in the Atlanta area or Georgia or in around the country as well.
That's right. Absolutely. And that's the beauty. You know, there's new technology out there called, you know, geographic information systems, you know, so they provide a lot of data all over the country about income levels and healthcare spending habits and mm-hmm. disposable income levels. So mm-hmm. These are powerful pieces of information. If you want to go from Atlanta to, you know, Chicago, it doesn't matter where you are.
Right.
You know, you have this ability to learn more about a population without being there.
What do you need more of at the Prestige Group? Is it more physicians coming along as clients, or you just need more amplification of your services, or what are you looking to grow to?
Yeah, we're looking for a couple of things. So we're definitely looking for more clients in terms of physician practices, provider groups, you know, and that's for multiple purposes. Obviously, that helps our growth, but it also gives us more data. We can refine our algorithm mm-hmm. with more data. You know, that's
more
great.
More players in the space, the more finite the answers
exactly.
you can have, right?
Yeah. The other thing we've done, and we've had some very interesting conversations over the last couple of months with firms who we feel offer complementary services to providers. So, you know, marketing firms are a good example of that. You know, this is a good service to augment their offering. You know, healthcare marketing, again, there's no shortage of that. People are trying to help doctors reach more patients, but what we can do is give them a playbook to say, here's the target audience, you know, narrow it down a little bit, lower that cost per acquisition, which is a metric we really hammer away at when we're talking to folks. And so that those are the two kind of folks that we're involved in or audiences that we're looking for. Although, you know, payers, insurance companies are another interesting avenue for us. One thing is that segmentation is not new in healthcare, but it's traditionally been focused on more risk stratification. So understanding chronic, you know, conditions and understanding the riskiest piece of the population. But again, that's tied more to reimbursement. And that's where we see a shortcoming. You know, we think that this can be flipped a little bit and given to, you know, to other providers who can use it in a different way, more innovative. So.
And Atlanta's got to be a great place to have this all happening for the Prestige Group. You know, we've been labeled recently as the healthcare IT
That's
capital
right.
of the world.
That's right.
And we at Business Radio X spent some time at HIM16 this year. Were you guys out there?
We were not, although right. I have out in Vegas, right?
Yes, yep. Yeah, great event. We were out there with Justin Barnes and helping him
okay.
and everything. So, but yeah, why is Atlanta important for you, or what are some of the advantages of having your company started here?
Yeah, Atlanta is a tremendous market for healthcare, but also for IT. I think there's a strong group of individuals in this city that understand technology, understand math, statistics, all concepts that we're using. You know, one thing we try to do is not just come at this from a healthcare angle, mm-hmm. even though we're serving healthcare folks. And honestly, my background is fully healthcare, and you know, but the folks that I'm working with are not. They come from retail, automotive, you know, finance, real estate. We're trying to bring the best of a lot. So Atlanta is a unique place for that. I grew up in Georgia, not Atlanta. I grew up in the Southeast Georgia, which is, I think, one of the most beautiful places in the country.
Except in the summer when it's super hot, right?
Yep, that's right. That's right. No escaping it.
Yeah.
But you know, we moved to Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta when I was in high school, spent some time here. And I've seen the city go through an unbelievable change. It's really empowering to watch it develop, watch a lot of young people I see coming to the city. You know, they're trying to set down roots. They're trying to grow their business here. It's a good environment and a really powerful place with a lot of talent. That, I think that's the thing I keep coming back to is that, yes, there are a lot of clients here for us, but really what's really important to us is there's a lot of people that can help us develop our business. Yeah,
partners in industry there
exactly.
can help you grow for sure.
So, that's right.
So very good. So please tell our listeners how they can get more information about yourself or the Bestige Group.
That's right. So there's two ways really. You know, folks can feel free to email us at info@bestigegroup.com. That's BESTIGE group.com. And, you know, the other way is, of course, I'm happy to give out my cell phone, which is 646-701-1249. It's a New York area code, but I am in Atlanta. I used to live in New York.
Okay.
I'm a transplant. So.
Good. And why the name Bestige Group? How'd that name come about?
Oh, I think you'll need another show
okay.
for that.
Okay. Well, part two then.
It's
right?
a long story, but.
No, very interesting for sure. You can't look at the name and decide what they can do. So you'd have to actually go to the website
That's
and
right.
dive in there to,
That's right.
to figure out, okay, they're doing this. So thank you so much, Supri, for joining us and wish you much success going forward in 2016
thank
and beyond.
You.
My pleasure. And now it's time for our headliner here, the chief net weaver himself, Bob Littell. 47 years he's been in the financial services, but his real passion for the last 17 years has been a concept he created called net weaving. Please explain that to our listeners.
Well, some of you, some of your listeners have heard me speak a little before on net weaving, and I'm thrilled to say it again because this concept is now, I'm proud to say, spreading around the world. And it's really a concept that takes the whole idea of networking and flips it around. And where it came from is almost everybody I ever talk to can identify with being in a large networking group of any kind. And you're having this conversation with someone eyeball to eyeball until they decide you are not the perfect prospect for them right then and there. And instead of the direct eye contact, the eyes shift to right shoulder, left shoulder as they're looking for their next landing spot. So I identified what I think are the two major weaknesses of what I consider to be traditional networking, the superficiality. Too many conversations that are not leading anywhere. They're just trying to identify whether a person is a prospect or not. The second weakness, and this can be true of net weaving as well, is a lack of follow-up and follow-through. So many times you meet people at a meeting and, gee, let's get together, let's have lunch. And next thing you know, you go back to your office, a week goes by, 2 weeks goes by, you look across at this business card you've collected. You can't remember what they looked like, let alone what you talked about. So net weaving really takes that on headlong.
Mm-hmm.
And there are three skill sets to net weaving. One is simply learning to be a better listener, a selective listener on who do I know that this person would benefit meeting and getting to know. Secondly, kind of being of a giver kind of a mindset. What resources do I have or people within my network have who'd be willing gratuitously to offer those resources and services and information just as a way of building a trusted relationship? And the third skill set, very much in line with the first two, is constantly being on the lookout for exceptional people in all industries across the board and finding a way first to help them and then over time making a trusted resource network. I think one of the real weaknesses that people have is they stay too attuned to their own industry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to become what we call a go-to person, where people call you when it has nothing to do with your own business, your own industry, they call you because you have this reputation for being a knowledgeable person across multiple industries and professions. And so that's really, in a nutshell, what the skill sets of net weaving are all about.
Net weaving. And we've been talking about networking this week here, Alex, haven't we?
A lot.
Ricky Steele was in here yesterday and said the heart of networking is the word work.
Yeah.
Work. So you got to do some work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's getting out there, out of your comfort zone, meeting people, having that conversation. But I think from my perspective, and I'm terrible, is the follow-up, I think, where I drop the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have great conversations. We chat about personal stuff and we exchange cards, but then it just goes radio silent after that.
Well, that's where net weaving takes it to the next step, because, and this is fairly recent that I've developed kind of what I would call three levels of net weaving. The first one is just being very conscious of those three skill sets and constantly looking to expand your ability of being at a networking meeting, seeing a friend, and then having a conversation with someone who you think all of a sudden, wow, you ought to meet so-and-so. And you go over and you drag them over and introduce them to that person. But the real aha that I've had recently is there's three skill sets to net weaving, but the action step of net weaving, and I know we'll be talking about net weaving Pay It Forward Week, is to actually host meetings where you actually decide that two people that you know or that you would like to know would benefit meeting each other, and you actually set the meeting up after qualifying that the two people really would like to meet each other. You don't want to force meetings, and especially timing may not be right, but you actually set the meeting up. You learn how to facilitate the meeting in a way that it'll maximize the chances that the two people would really benefit meeting each other, and that they'll discover people they know in common they never would have known if you hadn't made that connection. But what I discovered is that many people are not comfortable with actually setting that meeting up and facilitating it. In some cases, it's just a matter of time that they just don't have time. But if you're an entrepreneur, this is an absolutely perfect way that you should be spending 10 to 15 to 20% of your time. So the second level of net weaving is actually learning how to host meetings, but doing it at what I call your own peer level. So these are friends, people you know, they're in your network, or they're pretty much at your same level. But you know, and I've mentioned before, I'm in my fifth year of my Don't Need to Read the Book book club, which once again would take an entire show to discuss. We had our last one last night. And one of the books that we summarized was a wonderful book by Judy Robinette called How to Be a Power Connector. And what Judy did, and starting out in HR and actually as a social worker even before that, she started making connections, but not at her own peer level. She started realizing that powerful people want to meet other powerful people. So today, this lady has what she calls her platinum Rolodex with six billionaires in it.
Okay.
Wow.
And so the third level of net weaving is really understanding that if you have the ability to step outside your comfort zone and realize that fact that powerful people want to meet each other, and if you are the one to set that meeting up and make the connection, guess what? You get pulled up into that higher network.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to hear more about the Pay It Forward Week. That's coming up April 25th.
That's correct.
Tell us more about that.
Well, you know, this has evolved. The first year that we set up this meeting where it's all about getting people to actually host meetings in restaurants, hotels, business clubs, coffee shops, any place where you could set up a meeting to introduce two people who you think would just benefit meeting each other. The first couple of years, I did it where I was actually setting the meeting up by contacting 100 executives who would then be introduced by 50 students to each other. The first year, it was high school students. The second year, it was college students. And all I can tell you is it took up almost my entire life for about 3 months.
I bet it did.
And the real goal of NetWeaving Pay It Forward Week, this is the fourth year, we'll have the governor's proclamation for the week. Seasons 52, Jay Christopher's and the Capitol Grill are all places where we're encouraging people to go, as well as the Buckhead Club, where I'm a member as well. And the idea is to bring together these people and to set up what we call an economic ripple effect. Because just imagine if that week restaurants, hotels, business clubs are filled with these kind of meetings. Not only is it going to help the restaurants, but just imagine some of these relationships that will be created that week will turn into new businesses, new business relationships. And so the idea is at the end of the meeting that you host, you ask each of them to pay it forward and to host a meeting for two others. And Thursday of that week is actually International Pay It Forward Day,
all right,
now celebrated in 52 countries, where the goal is, it was started in Australia, but the goal is simply to ask people to do something that day to help someone else and to ask them to then pay it forward.
Outstanding.
Exciting.
And yes. And what motivates you behind all this? Why do you keep doing this? What do you get the most satisfaction out of it?
Well, that's the part that if you can get people to actually host the meeting, it's actually selfish on my part. We actually live up in Big Canoe, mm-hmm, about an hour north. I come down and we have a condo in Buckhead. And I tell people my goal is every Tuesday to actually come down to host a meeting, mm-hmm, to introduce two people. And I tell people it's very selfish on my part because I feel that I end up walking out of that meeting higher than either of the two people that I've connected. And it makes me better at everything I do that week.
So that's what you get the most joy
out
of.
Energy,
right?
Absolutely.
The connections, when they're made, business is being done,
oh, yeah,
and relationships are being built up. And it's because of the chief net weaver himself, Bob Littell.
Yes.
That's good.
Well, we actually have a nonprofit, an organization called CEO Net Weavers. Mm-hmm. And the goal there, we have about 80 members. And these are CEOs of companies, 5 million or more of annual revenue. But it's all built on the servant leader concept. So about 80% of our members are current or former CEOs, and the other 20% are what I am, which are called partners, where we're dealing with CEOs at that level on a regular basis. And what we do is we help mid-sized companies do it all pro bono, just help them create a team and help them move to the next level.
Excellent. And let's make sure we tell our listeners how they can get involved with the net weaving, the chief net weaver himself, or one of these events, or if they want to host their own event,
sure,
how would they do that?
Well, you can go to netweaving-PIF, as in Pay It Forward, and I am on the board of the Pay It Forward Foundation. So netweaving-PIF-week.com. And you will see the number of companies that are sponsors, and anyone who'd like to be a sponsor, it's only $500, and 100% of the money is divided between Junior Achievement and 250 to Junior Achievement, and 250 goes to the Pay It Forward Foundation, created by Katherine Ryan High, the lady who wrote the book the movie's based on.
Good deal, for sure. So there's a movie about this.
Oh, Pay It Forward is a classic.
Do I need to see this?
That's a great
movie.
Oh, yeah. It's Helen.
Yeah. I need to fire the VCR back up.
Helen Hunt. Haley Jo Osment.
And, okay. Oh, he was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
Well, Kevin Spacey, too.
Kevin Spacey. Yeah.
Oh, so you've seen it, Alex.
I've seen it. It's
okay.
A great movie. Yeah.
Good.
Have a handkerchief ready.
Get your tissues beside you, but it's worth watching.
Good. All right. Well, thank you so much, Bob, for joining us. And before we get out, let's go back around the table and just visit with our guests one more time. Starting with you, Bob, you're doing some great work, but what do you like to do when you're off time? Where can people find you when you're not connecting others?
Well, I turned 70 in September.
Congratulations. Big party at Bob's, it sounds like.
No, the big reason why I'm so happy is that I just took up golf seriously.
Oh, wow.
And when you turn age 70, you get to hit from the gold tees rather than the white.
Do they actually check your ID?
No, but I'm just absolutely having the best time. I am busier at age almost 70 than I've ever been in my life.
That's it.
And I might add, I'm on the board of a new organization because I know you're passionate about veterans.
Oh, yeah.
And this organization, Safe America, one of their new goals, in addition to emergency training and preparedness, is, did you know that 15% of homeless veterans are women? And rather than males who typically go to a shelter, most of those women veterans are sleeping in cars, especially if they have children.
Did not know that.
So it's a great organization, the Safe America Foundation, but hopefully I'll be helping them with several things.
Yeah, and if we can help in any sort of way, we'd be happy to do so. We've recently started a program here on the network called Veterans Connect Radio. Oh. We're bringing together veteran entrepreneurs, veteran organizations, veteran business people who are doing good work here in Atlanta. So we'd love to feature that organization. So thank you so much, Bob. And back to you, Super, before we get out, tell folks, where can they find you? What do you like to do in your off time?
Yeah, I, you know, you're going to find me on the golf course with Bob.
Okay, but, good.
But, you know, that's all going to come to an end pretty soon. We are, my wife and I are expecting our first baby in
Congratulations. Oh, yeah, we got some announcements here today on the show. Alex, this is awesome.
It's marriage and baby announcements.
Yeah,
time,
right. So you're looking forward to that, your first
Absolutely.
Child.
Absolutely. Very excited. Yep. Very excited. Nervous, of course.
Right. So there won't be much off time once the baby arrives.
No, that's
so enjoy
right.
yourself now.
That's Absolutely. Right. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I know Atlanta's proud to call you one of their own, and people can find you out and about or with the new baby when she arrives.
Absolutely. And,
or on the golf course.
That's
or
right.
Pete. Yeah, we don't know. but remind our listeners again how they can find out more about the Bastige Group.
Yeah. So I think the easiest way is really either through LinkedIn, you can find me, Supreet Patel, or you know, you can email us at info@bastigegroup.com or, my cell phone, 646-701-1249.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. And Darshan, for you, I know you're super busy, so you probably don't get a lot of off time. You got a wedding coming up this summer. Are you planning for that every day or looking forward to it every day?
No, I'm not one of those girly girls, so I'm actually not. We're just going to do something simple and have a big party outdoors.
Okay.
But my my fiance is a Marine. I say former Marine, and he corrects
Once
me.
Once a Marine, so, always a Marine.
But he served there for 6 years. So
nice.
I too have an interest in veteran affairs and look forward to working with a judge in DeKalb County who actually is starting up a veterans court, which is directly sort of related to, I mean, homelessness and,
yes.
and all that is really connected together. So even though I don't have a lot of downtime, when I do have downtime, I'm either hanging out with my fiance or cooking. I can do that even though I'm a millennial woman. I can cook or, you know, just trying to better my community because DeKalb County is so special
to social me. Good, it just resonates from you. It sounds like that's what you want to do. You're most passionate about it and serving Atlanta and the people. And I know they're proud to call you one of their own. So, but if businesses need you or need their help as a state rep, if someone in your district needs your help, how can they get in touch with you and talk to you?
Yeah, sure. Well, my my office number down at the state capitol is 446-560-109. I would give out my cell phone number, but then I would never sleep. So I'm going to give out my office number.
Okay.
And then the office number to my law firm is 678-739-8109. And if all this fails, you can always Google me, Darshan, D-A-R-S-H-U-N, Kendrick.
Yes.
Ignore the first page of Google. Go to the second page, because I am a politician, so you can imagine that I've had articles written about me. But go to the second page where it looks like somebody saying something nice about me, and then click on that website.
Oh, outstanding. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Please do come back and be a guest. We'd love to feature you again here on Atlanta Business Radio.
Thank you.
And thank you, Alex, for running the board and keeping us straight. Once again, another successful show. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We are Business Radio X. So if your company is out there doing something interesting to generally serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the contact page at businessradiox.com and pitch us your story. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X network, I'm Ryan Red Hawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.